This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on whose land we are broadcasting from. Also, before I go any further, I would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. Hope everybody had a deadly Friday down at Musgrave Park and around the country. And here in Brisbane, southeast Brisbane, the NAIDOC celebrations are still carrying on. Friday, you will hear us live from the Murray School for the NAIDOC and also over Stradbroke Island for their NAIDOC as well. Hope everybody's had a good morning. A bit chilly for myself. And I have Carver Watson in the studio with me. Good morning, Carver. How you going?
Going very well, bud.
Thanks for
the invite.
Yes,
don't often get to sit on the mic these days, but always a pleasure.
Definitely. But our guest this morning, Debbie Kilroy from Sisters Inside, just before we start, could you tell us a bit about yourself and some of the stuff you're involved in?
Sure. Thanks, Bo, and thanks for the invite to speak this morning. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land in which we meet today and pay my respects to elders past and present. I'd also like to acknowledge the Murray School and the great work the Murray School does for all the young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children in this area, and I think we need more Murray schools, not only in this jurisdiction, but around the country to support Aboriginal children in their education. Definitely. And, of course, Quandanmooka is a place in Jerribah that I regularly go and visit, as my husband resides over there pretty much full time. He doesn't like coming back to the mainland anymore. Such a beautiful spot in Jerribah is. I'm the CEO of Sisters Inside. So Sisters Inside's an independent non-government organisation which exists for the advocacy and to ensure the human rights of women in the criminal and girls in the criminal injustice system, and we do so alongside women. And basically what that means is when I was in prison myself and when I was released, I said I would come back. The prison said, yeah, you'll be back in handcuffs, but I never came back in handcuffs that time. But I did come back, and with the Lifers and Long-Termers group, we set up Sisters Inside, and we've been going ever since. And we still have a management committee of women in prison that we meet monthly, like board meetings, like every other NGO. And so we're very much driven by women who are in prison and women who have been in prison. We're the ones that make the decision. Mm-hmm. So whether we're Aboriginal or not, as we say, nothing about us without us.
Mm-hmm. Just how far ago was when you walked out, and then in between that gap when you walked back in, I guess, as sort of with the role that you're doing now?
Sure. Well, it's a while ago now, so because I'm getting older. I walked out in 1992, but we have to remember back the Bjelke-Petersen government got ousted and the Goss government came in October 89, and then a lot of changes came into play with a Labor government in power. And so what had happened was the Boggle Road, the women's prison at Boggle Road, a lot of people didn't know that there was a women's prison out the back, and it was overcrowded then. Funny, that's what we'll talk about soon. The Director General at the time of Corrections and the Minister set up this little pilot program, like a little experiment with women, and established all these committees. And so there was a number of us women on different committees, and there was conveners, or like a chair, I suppose, that then would meet with the General Manager of the prison once a month to raise issues. Now, it could be issues around health services, recreation, visits, food. We had a number of committees, and so from those committees there was a long-termers and lifers committee. And so when I was released on parole, and because I knew the general manager who was still in play, and it was a period of reform, we would call it back then, and obviously we've regressed a lot, but so I was allowed back in, and we just continued the meetings with the lifers and long-termers, and hence became the name Sisters Inside. And we received our first government funding in 1994 to address domestic and family violence, because what had happened back then, and it still happens today, is one of the Aboriginal women was being released and she had nowhere to go, and we were advocating to say we need to get her someplace safe to go, not back to the violent partner. She had nowhere else to go. She went back to the violent partner and she was killed within 24 hours. And so we hear the same story still today, some, you know, 20 years on, which is absolute, you know, horrific, really.
And so the role that you do play isn't just regarding, you know, women inside prisons or young girls. It's also working with them to stay out.
Oh, absolutely. We're a prison abolitionist organisation. And so I suppose we talk about, people freak out when they hear prison abolition. They're like, oh my God, what are we going to do with the murderers and the rapists? But we know that that's not who's in our prisons. Mm. Yes, there are people there convicted of those offences, but the majority of people, women, marginalised, disadvantaged, mentally unwell with severe drug addictions, high rates of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women who've been dispossessed with intergenerational trauma due to colonisation, the theft of this country that continues today. So the hysteria is in response to opening the door and letting everybody out. So that's why we talk about imagining abolition. So how do we get there? So what are the strategies to get there? And so we talk about decarceration. We don't talk about reform, because anytime you talk about reform, it's usually net widening. You know, if you think of, for example, you know, England decided to send petty people who committed so-called petty crimes because they're impoverished or starving, stealing a loaf of bread or a few dollars, you know, were packed on ships and sent here and colonised this country. So, you know, it's a net widener. So it expanded. And so, and I we still live in that framework, I believe, of the carceral state from the beginnings when white fellas arrived and invaded this country.
Mm. It's almost like a fund. It's an industry as well. You know,
oh, absolutely.
Prison is an industry, and that's something I guess that is always, yeah, I mean, there are vested interest groups in seeing large populations of people incarcerated. Yeah. And so you're actually dealing with this whole economic issue then when you're talking about decarceration.
Mm. Mm. Well, it's interesting because we think about that in the private prison context, but it's also in the public prison context too, because we've got people in our prisons in this jurisdictions and other jurisdictions that are so-called employed. You know, one of the priorities is jobs at the moment. But, I mean, so women are ripping up rags or sewing sheets or whatever it is. But, I mean, you know, you can't get good jobs. Like, you can't get good jobs when you're released. And I remember one young Aboriginal woman who I've known for most of her life, and she was 17 when she came into the system, and she worked for 7 years in the same industry. And when she was released, she actually went to that corporation and asked for a job because she knew everything about it, you know. Mm. And they said, no, we don't employ ex-prisoners, those with criminal records. So it's a joke. It's a lie. But what we do see is the state also makes money on the backs of women and men who are working basically slave labour, $2 to $3 a day inside the prison system. Yeah.
Mm. I just wanted to follow on that thing of decarceration. So justice reinvestment, you know, when we actually think about the costs of incarcerating people as opposed to, you know, sort of diversionary programs or other more restorative sort of models. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not a fan of justice reinvestment. Mm. Even the name, justice, where's the justice in the first instance? That actually suggests that there's justice in the first instance and there's not. Mm. And when we look at, and I know, like, it's been a huge, there's been a huge drive in the US around justice reinvestment, and now Australia's taken it on in some jurisdictions. But, I mean, you know, when we look at the US, when we really look at it, it actually is not working because it's, in theory, it would work. However, in practice, it's not, because money's just getting it, what I see is like the deck chairs on the Titanic are being rearranged. So money that we see that's so-called being reinvested is reinvested in courts, which is part of the prison industry, the prison industrial complex, you know, or more cops, which is you have more cops, you have more people arrested, and predominantly in poorer areas because that's where the police go. They don't hang out over at Hamilton Hill or Clayfield and where the, you know, the upper class live. There's rarely many arrests that occur there. So we talk about Aboriginal communities have more police ratio to people than like the more affluent suburbs. So justice reinvestment, I get really worried about that, and it's getting a lot of traction here because we're actually really not thinking about the real issues. We're actually just talking about where we reshuffle money, and I see it more as a net widener again. Mm-hmm. Now, some programs that they've undertaken and evaluated, yes, may have great outcomes for a small group of people, but that's like a targeted little program. It's like early intervention was many years ago, and the feds put a lot of money in it and had, you know, if we, the theory behind that was if you're 15-year-old Aboriginal girl who's pregnant, well, you actually need to be targeted in a program to support. Well, how about, well, yes, on one level, of course she does, but why is it that we got to target individuals and not have the social services in our community so anybody can access them, and so we're not relying on the carceral state that we're actually providing support in the community and keeping community together?
Mm-hmm. I was just talking about this on the weekend, you know, like things like, yeah, over-incarceration, over-representation, poor health outcomes, education outcomes. It's a structural problem. You know, you can go to any country on the planet, and wherever there is a sense of classism or stratification,
or that capitalism,
you will always see that these people who do from low socioeconomic areas overrepresented in all these areas. And so to me, it seems like just a fundamentally structural problem.
Yeah, it's called capitalism.
Yeah.
Mm. And it thrives on that, because you've got to have the haves and the have-nots for capitalism, you know, to survive. And in that, then what we value, if we, you know, believe in capitalism, is actually property over people. We're not valuing people anymore. And so we see people being discarded. So, you know, I remember when I was in prison, and so one of my mates got murdered sitting beside me, closer than you're sitting beside me now. And it was on the front page of every newspaper. It went international because people were horrified that a murder could happen in a prison and in a women's prison. If someone's actually murdered in a prison now, it doesn't even hit the papers. It doesn't even hit the radar. So it's a clear indication of, like, over 20 years, and which isn't that long, you know, that people who are in prison are actually deemed as not worthy to even be newsworthy, their lives. They're just discarded human beings in our society. And as long as we continue to support that under the capitalist regime, we're only going to see more of it and more people thrown to the garbage heap, if you like, and hence more prisons, more people, you know, incarcerated. And now we've got the electronic incarceration where everyone's advocating for the ankle monitors. So we have, you know, the electronic incarceration, those carceral types of mechanisms, which actually net widens, because people go, oh, yeah, I'll put one of those monitors on my ankles. It's great. I don't have to be in prison. But it's actually a net widening. So a couple of years ago, I went into a girl's prison, youth prison, in Oakland. I was with my friend Angela Davis there, and we went in there to talk to the girls because they'd been reading a number of books in their library. And they were very politicised. They understood prison abolition and decarceration. And we had this big group conversation. There was about 40 of us in the room, which was awesome. But, I mean, and what had happened was in that prison, it was a massive building that had the courts, it had prosecutors, defence lawyers, it had, like, probation, parole officers, it had also had the youth prison. It was like this massive built building that had everything in it. And we were talking to the person that was taking us into there initially, saying that, oh, the numbers were really high with the children in the youth prison, but they'd been drastically reduced because all the kids are getting these electronic monitors. And then we asked, so how many kids were in there? They said, oh, about up to 300 boys and girls, but the numbers had come down, but there was over 1,000 kids then that had electric monitors on their ankles. So the net widening, and it's a carceral state. Like, and these same companies, like Serco, who has a contract now to run the women's prison, and it's their first women's prison that they will run in the world, Serco, which is, like, horrific. I cannot believe this. We're in Queensland and we're allowing a private corporation to run the first women's prison in the world. Like, what is Queensland thinking about? And we're, you know, we're just net widening and criminalising and imprisoning more people.
So when you talk about abolition, what does that mean? You know, and because you said before, I guess a lot of people jump to the conclusion, what are you saying, that we don't have prisons?
Well, eventually, of course, that's what we're saying, yes. We're imagining a world without prisons.
Does that mean, like, better policing from community then? Well, like in terms of, you know, crime and or whatever, you know, when these things happen, you know, making, I guess.
Well, crime's a theory. A behaviour today may not be a crime and tomorrow it will be. So if you think about simple things like public nuisance offences, public type offences, or you think about begging even, begging never used to be a criminal offence. Now it's an offence.
Mm.
So we just, you know, we keep building up, well, whatever the behaviours are now of those that we don't like or don't feel they should be part of the community, we actually then, you know, legislate crime so that they can be removed and disappeared into our prison system. So it's about we would have a very different community than what we would have today, obviously, and that's where we've got to put a lot of work into. So it'd be about supporting everybody in our community, no matter who they are and what they are, and addressing issues within our communities and not relying on police. We know that police escalate conflict, for example, and when police are called, usually people are criminalised and imprisoned. We actually got to start learning how to address conflict between ourselves with each other and not calling in the police, the state, to actually remove the responsibility from each other and resolve conflict. And that's not being taught in schools at all, you know, conflict resolution. Like if you're a child, and we're seeing five-year-olds, you know, being arrested and taken out of schools in handcuffs, it's horrific. Like instead of being able to deal, like if we as adults can't deal with five-year-old children, like come on, what are we saying about ourselves?
Yeah.
And if someone's in trouble at school, a child, we actually send them to the principal. We don't actually deal with the issue between if there's conflict with the children to resolve that conflict. Mm. We have to go back to basic and about connections of human beings instead of throwing away to the police and the prison system and the industry that's thriving. Mm. And then those people that are captured in that's who we fear.
And already starting that relationship with authority, or, you know, like this person, you know, is wrong and I'm right, and, you know, what they say is the way to go. Like I saw that on Friday at NAIDOC as well. There was these, I think it was like three, you know, like 10-year-old, 12-year-old young boys.
Yeah, I saw you talk about that. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, bub, we'll just walk slow, Ela. And it was pretty much just near where your tent was as well.
Yeah.
I walked up the hill and I stopped and I just pulled out my phone, like muck around that I was on it. And this cop goes, oh, did you hear about that stolen car in Cherbourg? Do you know anything about it? And I turned around. I said, what?
Oh, you're saying talking to you?
No, to these young kids.
Oh. Young fellas, yeah.
And I said, oi, boys, you're right or what? Yeah. Go, yeah. And then I turned to the cop and I said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, oh, what? I was like, you can't question young kids, you know, without a...
Yeah, on NAIDOC Day, on Family Fun Day, you know? Mm.
Like, just in general, like you can't... I'm sure you can't do that, eh? Like, you can't talk to minors without...
No.
Their parents, and then he acted up and then, like, you know, walked up to me and I said, I ain't talking to you, bro. And, like, by the time the young fellas walked away, so we just walked away. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And fundamentally, like, capitalism, like we were discussing before, relies on racism as well. Mm. And so that's why so many black bodies thrown away, you know, into the carceral systems and structures. So, we've got a long, hard road to travel, but we need to continue that. And I don't believe I'm going to see prison abolition in my life. Those of us that are prison abolitionists, we know that. But the fight and the struggle has to continue. And so that's why we support so many young women to come up in the ranks, to have a political analysis around prison abolition, to understand and to think of decarceration in the context for themselves and their families and their communities to move forward and support each other, because they're the ones that are going to take the lead. You young ones, you sound old, I'm the old one in the room. Got it, yeah, you know, move. And it's so exciting to see the next generation coming through and being so active and honest and putting it out there. And what you've got today, which what we never had, is social media. And I know there's pros and cons in that, but, I mean, it's a great way to get the word out really quickly, and have conversations. It all can also be very destructive, but, I mean, it's about
how you use it.
How we use it.
Yeah. And that thing of the internet's global as well, you know. So you get to have this dialogue with other countries and other people in similar situations and talk about the issues.
Mm.
But you mentioned there about the work that you do in terms of, I guess, creating awareness and working with people from Citizens Inside about generating that awareness. So how do you do that? I mean, is there books that you read together or books that you recommend? And, I mean, what does that look like?
It could be all those things. It's predominantly about the relationships that we all have together as not only staff and volunteers, but the women that we walk with. So we do a lot of work with the women inside on our management committee, and a lot of work with the women who we're connected to. Like, so I'm old enough now that I know, like, we're employing young women that I've known since I've been born that have come up through where mum's been in prison, or and they may have been, you know, through the juvie system, or, you know, collided with the cops at different times, but where we've supported them to stay in school and now they're employed. And so that's what I'm talking about, the young ones, that they actually move through, because, and that's part of decarceration, that they're not actually captured and criminalised and imprisoned, that we can support them in a community through the times of difficulty, while they're living in poverty and struggling and to go to school and to get a feed and all those things, and to do what we can to actually create the environment that they can continue on. And we've got like one of our, the first young Aboriginal women has just been enrolled in university beginning of this year. She's finished her first semester, which is just fantastic. And her life's been you know, it still is a struggle, but she's going to uni now and she's loving it. And she used to be so, she was not confident in herself at all. But once she started, but she's a brilliant painter, beautiful artist, you know, and that's what she's doing at uni, art. And yeah, and since she's been going to uni, she's holds her head up high, and yeah, you know. She's just brilliant, and she has the most amazing mind, you know, the most amazing mind. And so you see that transformation. And so they're the young women that, you know, particularly Aboriginal women that we're supporting to come up through the ranks. And it doesn't mean that they are going to go stay at Sisters Inside, work at Sisters Inside, take over Sisters Inside. They may do all of them things too, but it's about what they want to do for themselves and their family and their community and go forward, so that they're not, don't become, you know, a victim of the carceral system.
We're just going to head to a quick song break, and we'll come back and want to have a yarn about, I guess, the effects that the new proposed prison in Gatton that's going to be run by Serco is going to have on women, and also, I guess, an upcoming conference that you have in November, I believe. You're listening to Let's Talk. Me and Carver are yarning with Debbie Kilroy, CEO from Sisters Inside. This song is Kev Carmody, Cannot Buy My Soul.
'1788 down Sydney Cove, the first boat people land, and they say, sorry boys, I gained your loss, where can I steal your land? And if you break out new British law, for sure you're gonna hang. Work your life like our convicts, with a chain on your neck and hands. And they taught us, whoa, black woman, thou shalt not steal. Said, hey, yeah, black man, thou shalt not steal. We're gonna civilize black barbaric life, teach you how to kneel. That your history couldn't hide genocide, the hypocrisy to us was real. Why your Jesus said, supposed to give the oppressed a better deal. We say to you, yes, our land, thou shalt not steal. Whoa, yeah, our land, you better deal. Well, your science and technology, hey, you can make a nuclear bomb. Development has increased its size, 3 million megatons. And if you think that's progress, I say, unsound, for you should have found out long ago, you best keep it in the ground. And they taught us, oh, black woman, thou shalt not steal. Said, hey, yeah, black man, thou shalt not steal. We're gonna civilize your black barbaric lives, and we teach you how to kneel. But your history couldn't hide the genocide. Why your Jesus said you're supposed to give the oppressed a better deal. We say to you, yes, white man, thou shalt not steal. Whoa, yeah, our land, you better heal. Well, Job and me and Jesus sitting underneath that invisibility bridge, watching that blazing sun go down behind the tall tree and mountain ridge. The land's out. Heritage and speed.
couldn't hide the genocide. The hypocrisy that was real. Oh yeah, Jesus said you're supposed to give the oppressed a better deal. We say to you, this white man, thou shalt not steal. Whoa, yeah, I'll hand you better heed. Well, you talk of conservation, keep the forest pristine green. But in 200 years, your materialism has stripped the forest clean. And a racist's a contradiction that's understood by none. Mostly their left hand holds the Bible, right hand holds a gun. And they taught us, whoa, black woman, thou shalt not steal. She said, yeah, black man, thou shalt not steal. We're gonna civilize you, black barbaric lies, and we teach you how to kneel. But your history couldn't hide the genocide, the hypocrisy that was real. Oh, your Jesus said you're supposed to give the oppressed a better deal. We say to you, white man, thou shalt not steal. Whoa, yeah, I'll hand you better heed. Whoa, yeah, white man, thou shalt not steal. Whoa, yeah, I'll hand you better heed.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
And you're back on Let's Talk. And I got that song wrong. It wasn't Can I Buy My Soul Into Thou Shall Not Steal by Uncle Kev Carmody. You're back on Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM in the studio with Carver Watson. And our guest is Debbie Kilroy. We wanted to bring you in and have a yarn about the new proposed prison in Gatton Serco, which is a privatised prison. Can you tell us a bit about, I guess, Serco as a company? And also some of the facilities, if they have any prisons in Australia or around the world, or like, yeah, what's their...
Sure. Yeah, who's Serco?
Who's Serco? That's a good question. There's, if you Google Serco, you'll find little, oh, I suppose, I don't know, do you Google, Goggle, YouTube things? But anyway, they have like little video things about Serco, the best, the biggest corporation in the world, but the most secret, that no one really knows who they are. And so they, their tentacles are... very wide and are expanding. So they have the 11, I think it is, detention centres here, immigration detention centres. They, I think they just received, awarded the contract for the NDIS phone advice, and I believe they tendered, I don't know if they got it, for the Centrelink phone advice as well, and they had tendered for public housing in New South Wales, but they're very big. They in the UK, so they run transport systems. They look after the Queen's planes. They are in nuclear stations. They, like, it's amazing. Like, you just go and do a bit of research. It doesn't take much to find how far and wide their tentacles are. And like Yarlswood Detention Centre, where women and children are, is probably the most horrific example of Serco management, because it's the most publicised, obviously, where women, you know, it takes a lot for women to protest. Men protest, women don't, because they're threatened about, you know, that they'll lose contact with their children, et cetera, or their children will be moved if they're in the prison, et cetera. But there's serious allegations out of Yarlswood where women have been raped, sexually abused, even where the Serco staff have come out and said the violence is so bad that they're trying to stop it. And it's so bad that women have even been on like a 100-day hunger strike. So that tells me something, like it's really bad in there. And this prison here, now Serco already has the contract for the men. So what had happened back in the early 2000s, when Labor was in, so Minister Spence and the Director General Rockett, Frank Rockett, so Spence and Rockett were in charge. They went for a little trip overseas and were captured by the 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 cell mega prisons in the US, and decided to come back here and build a 3,000 mega prison out at Gatton. Now, Sisters Inside, Prisons Legal Service, Catholic Prison Ministry, we did a lot of lobbying in that community. We would go out there once a week and do forums at night for Gatton community members, and go Saturday mornings to speak to people about opposing, because they hadn't made a decision whether Gatton wanted it or not. And we're actually getting a lot of traction about stopping it. And what had happened was, we know when we're getting traction against the system, because corrective services then came and rented a shop front. We didn't have the resources. We would drive up and back and, you know, do it in our own time. They rented a shop front and were there 7 days a week so that they could put their argument. Mm. And, you know, they were being sold a lie. They were being told, like the local fruit and veg fella, the local butcher, you know, oh, it's really good for our business. We're going to provide the food. And we're going, well, if you've got 3,000 people over there and 4,000 staff, that's 7,000 people, you can provide them breakfast, lunch and dinner. And they're like, oh, no, they're going to bring the multinational big semis down the freeway, the highway, and turn right. They're not going to turn left into Gatton. What you're going to have is a lot of people who are struggling to survive come and relocate there because their loved ones will be across the road. Now, the plan was for that prison, the first part of that prison section to be built was a women's prison. And so when the state comes out now and says, well, no, that prison was purpose-built for women, well, it was going to be a women's prison. All it actually means, purpose-built, is that there's six cells called the Mothers and Babies Unit, and those cells are built a little bit wider to fit a cot in. That's it. That's the purpose-built. It's a lie, right? There's a few more residential cells and secure cells, but so what? Women shouldn't be in maximum security anyway. They're not risky in that sense. So what had happened was we actually got it stopped from opening as a women's prison with a lot of behind-the-scenes debate. And so then – so it opened as a men's prison and Serco got the contract. Now, Serco's had the contract for a while and GEO has the contract at Arthur Gorry. And we all know how bad GEO is. ABC did a story on that. It's just horrific, the violence, physical and sexual violence, and the cover-ups.
Overcrowding as well.
Overcrowding, yeah, but there's overcrowding every prison.
Yeah.
This is the issue. So, and it's really interesting because people get scared of overcrowding because they think that crime is on a rise, but actually crime rates and imprisonment rates have nothing to do with each other. People find it difficult to get their head around that. But anyway, but that's the reality. Our crime rate is less than when lower than when I was a child, which is four decades ago. You know what I mean? So we don't have a crime wave. That's actual myth. That's the law and order campaign to instill fear, so that we allow capitalism to thrive, allow corporations to run our public services, and why we go yes, lock everybody up, lock everybody up, lock everybody up. And, you know, same gets the same. Like, as we say, nothing changes if nothing changes. So, anyway, so the women's prison at Brisbane Women's has been overcrowded for a very long time. We've been raising these issues for a long time, and we've been talking about how to decarcerate, put programs in place to get women released, do a lot of work at the front end of the courts. So I'm a lawyer as well, so we represent a lot of people in the courts to, you know, with the purpose of getting them the best outcome so they're not in prison. If they are in prison, we run a Supreme Court bail program, so we see every woman on remand and apply for bail in Supreme Court if they're eligible and get them out and support them in the community. You know, and if women are sentenced, assist them with parole, get them out and hopefully keep them out and support them in the community. So we do all that work. So what's happened is corrections is massive part of the prison industry. They love prisons. It gives them power. It gives them control. It gives them more resources, more taxpayers' money. It bolsters them up. They puff their chests up. And so what they decided to do is now come out public and say, we're really worried about women sleeping on mattresses on concrete floors and their heads under toilets. Well, it's really interesting. They've only been worried about that the last couple of months. They haven't given a flying beep about it for decades. Because like I said before, when I was in Bogger Road, it was overcrowded. So there was a dormitory-style house at Bogger Road in the 70s, 80s. It was overcrowded, so they built the women's prison down the back of Bogger Road. Like I was in the original dormitory one, then I was in the Bogger Road one down the back. It was overcrowded. That's when the murder happened. So then they decided to build this prison here out at Wacol, Brisbane Women's, and now it's overcrowded. And see, that's what happens. Whenever you build more prisons, you know, the more cells you have, the more they will be filled. That is the reality. And, you know, it's a failure. And we can't keep propping up the prison industry with taxpayers' money when we spend more money, $500,000 per year per person, to keep them incarcerated. More money's been spent on people, like the whole prison industry, than it is on children and education. You know, we must stop incarcerating, and we've got to make education the priority. You know, educate, not incarcerate. That makes more sense. But it doesn't in a capitalist society, because they don't want, capitalism doesn't want the most marginalised, disadvantaged, impoverished people, you know, getting a leg up. They need to stay down so the others can become richer and more wealthy and have more power. Like, that's pretty, you know, 101.
It's basic capitalism. Economics.
That's right, yeah. You know, and that once again, you know, we are socialised to be very individualistic. John Howard did that brilliantly when he was the Prime Minister. You know, he propped up the middle class, gave them all subsidies to buy property, and so then people just had their head down. I got to go to work, get my paycheck, pay my mortgage, got to go to work, got to go, you know, and the cycle goes on. And then that's when we started seeing all the bars and windows of homes and gated communities, you know, to keep the other out, where actually the reality is the highest amount of crimes happen under our own roofs. So, you know, when people started building these gated communities, I'm just like, oh, my God, I would not want to live in there. You're actually locked in with the perpetrators. Like, you know, the stranger danger is, you know, a very minimal level of crimes are committed by strangers. They're usually committed by those that we know and that we love, you know, particularly around violence, sexual, physical violence. And that's what's got to be addressed. Anyway, so it got a bit of traction. We were called in. We were told that this is the idea, that they're going to empty the men's prison at Gatton and turn it into a women's prison. I totally oppose and said that we will fight. I will fight this to my death, and it probably will kill me. But anyway, we just can't do this, because we're going to end up with another 300, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800. But in another decade, there's going to be another 1,000 women in there that we incarcerate on any one day. When does it stop? When does this failure of the prison system become an issue for average Joe and Jenny Blow in the community, you know, to say no more? Because these are people that we are throwing away, highly traumatised people, marginalised, impoverished people that are being, black bodies being thrown away under a bus that they can never get up from, basically. And middle class and upper class use these women, the women, to step on, to step up. You know, we hear a lot about, isn't it wonderful about the women who are breaking the glass ceiling? Well, I want to know when you're going to fix up the frickin' floorboards under my feet that everyone's fallen through. Forget the glass
ceiling.
Yeah.
Is this been approved? Is this stuff, is it coming, or is it still in the sort of proposal stage, this new prison?
Well, the minister announced it on the 3rd of July when he was out at Borellan opening another 189 cells out there. So Serco Men's Prison at one stage recently had 412 men out there, so it was overcrowded too. That's evidence that's been given at the CCC. Those men are being moved out to Borellan, so Borellan will be overcrowded. You know, the big gap that I see at the moment around the advocacy and agitation around this issue is the silence around the men. Like, there's no one coming out speaking against this for the men, because the men are overcrowded, do you know what I mean? Like, we work with women, so, yes, I know it's happening to the men, and that needs to stop too, absolutely. But, I mean, there's a bit of a gap, a massive gap.
Yeah, so there's no sort of equivalent of Sisters Inside for the male prisoners.
Advocating at all. And because a lot of organisations, the big NGOs, the bingos, you know, or the Care Bears, some of us call them, receive all the money, and they actually don't come out and advocate and disclose what's really happening in this system. They're happy just to take the money and run. And, you know, and they are part of the problem as well. If you take money to provide a service, you've got to expose the violence that's occurring inside the prison. Mm. If you are part of the problem, you are part of the prison industry and the welfare industry, while you're silent.
Mm. So is that part of the job now then, just to keep trying to expose, I guess, you know, the potential that, you know, what could happen in Gatton?
part of my job.
Well, it's, yeah, but it's fairly clear what's going to happen. It's going to be
over. It's going to happen. Women are going to be 2 hours.
The same problems. Yeah.
2 hours out of Brisbane, isolated. There's no public transport. Women don't hardly get any visits now at Brisbane Women's. And Corrective Services has raised that with us over the years about how they could increase the number of visitors, because we all know that research tells us keeping the family unit together is so-called rehabilitation. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, and then we have at least 50% of children of women in prison are in the care of the state. And they actually say, even when there's court orders, they still don't take children to visit their mothers who are in care, because they say, child safety says they don't have the resources. Well, if they don't have the resources to go to Waco, good Lord, they're never going to have the resources to go to Gatton. And the problem with Serco out there, you know, they'll have a contract, and it's a contract, a commercial in confidence contract. So what happens in there will be secret. If you go in there, if you're allowed access in there, you will be sworn to secrecy. So, you know, we will pretty – I don't even know if we'll even hit the front door. This is inside. We'll probably be banned straight up.
So is this a different setup to your current the current women's prison, yeah? So no, current women's prisons are privately owned.
No women's prison in this jurisdiction is private at all. So this will be the first women's private prison in this jurisdiction, and the first Serco women's private prison in the world. And I cannot believe, like I know we call Queensland the deep north, like Texas the deep south, but this is beyond a joke. When we've got a Labor government that prides itself on equality for women, and once again we see it's only for some women, not all women. It's not for marginalised, impoverished black women. You know, Labor women and men must step up, and the decision must be reversed as a matter of urgency. We have strategies which we have worked behind the scenes, and the government is very much aware of, that actually can reduce the numbers. And we know who the women are in the sense of, as to why the overcrowding, and it's actually women with mental health issues. They shouldn't be in prison in the first place. That's who's overcrowding our prisons, because what's happening is the government is using prisons as the default response to mental health services, homelessness, drug addiction, and poverty. And it must stop. There's got to be a new direction in policy instead of the same old, same old.
What's the issue with this? Why are they taking this policy line? Is it the tough on crime sort of appearance, and they think they're nabbing votes? And
well, what we've been told is that Corrective Services presented one option to the minister, and this is the option. There was no other option. Now, you know, as I said, there's plenty of other options, but it's the only option that Corrective Services has put up. And of course it's the only option. Like I said, their chest is puffed out and they want a new prison. And they actually want, I reckon they'll pride themselves on it. Corrective Service will tell everyone in the world, come and look at the first Serco women's prison in the world. Here we have it at Gatton. Shame, shame, shame. And it will be their legacy forever after. But how many women are going to be severely traumatized? How many women will die in that prison? And how will we ever know what's going on in there? Come on, Labor. You're so much better than this, I thought.
Just in the back end of the program too, later on this year you have a conference. Could you tell us a bit about that conference?
We do. We have a conference every 2 years, so an international conference, and people are invited. Check out our Facebook page, and we have a Facebook page for the conference called Imagining Abolition, A World Without Prisons. So we have a number of people that come all across the country and around the world, and we'll be talking specifically about, again, Imagining Abolition, A World Without Prisons. We'll have a great lineup. Our first, we're going to be, it'll be a bit different this time than how we usually run it, which people might freak out because everyone sort of loves our conference. But what we want to do is bring in more creative mediums. So whether it's art, slam poetry, musicians, dancing, We'll have on the first night, we'll have our art auction and exhibition. So all the young Aboriginal women who come to our art program every week have been painting. They'll be displayed on the first night and then go to auction. So that's always exciting time. And then on the second night, Nettery Mabo, who is our state manager for our youth programs, she is also an artist in her own right, just opened an exhibition down in Melbourne recently called Immersed, and we're going to bring that art exhibition up here, and it will be open for and the community to come so that they can experience Netta's new art exhibition, which will be very powerful as well.
Yeah, deadly.
Awesome. And where's that? Here in Brisbane?
It's here in Brisbane at Park Bridges.
It's around. It'll be somewhere.
No, they changed their name. It's really interesting. Our first conference that we had in 2001, we're back at the same hotel. So, yeah, but they've changed their name.
Oh, it's over here in South Wing?
No.
Royal Honour Park next to Botanical Gardens. Yeah?
No. Up the top of North Quay.
Yeah.
At the William Jolly Bridge there?
Yeah.
So it'll be great. So Angela Davis will be here, Kim Pate from... Deadly. Canada, we've got, you know, Jackie Huggins, Pat Turner, Chelsea Bond's trying to sort out her, she's at another conference to get there and, you know, we've asked Celeste Little and Tarnine and a whole heap of young activists to come. Yeah, which will be great. So, yeah, it'll be great if you actually come and you're more than welcome to come and broadcast from there well.
Is there an event this Friday as well? Were you sponsoring that event on Friday here in West End?
No, we're not sponsoring it, but another group of women are, I think, but we're going. So it's a NAIDOC cocktail ball party.
That's right.
West End. So, that'll be exciting. There's a whole heap of us going to that, and Amy and Chelsea speaking at that.
And, they're the... speakers in Marawa.
So that'll be
our very own Lizzie Orley's MC.
Lizzie's doing it. Yep, that'll be great. That's this Friday night,
I want to say a big thanks, Debbie, for joining us on the program this morning.
No, thanks for having me.
That's all good. You've been listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. You can catch the repeat at 7 PM, or you can go onto our website at 98.9fm.com.au to catch catch the podcast. I was going to head to a quick song, and this is Rochelle Watson with Black to Reality. You are listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM.